Gunpowder, Treason, and Plot. A play for radio by A.J. Walton, with Michael Spice as Guy Fawkes, Christopher Scott as Thomas Winter, and John Moffat as Robert Cecil. Gunpowder, Treason, and Plot.
See that lark up there? I shall be like that one day. High up, above the rest of the world.
Oh, you are a fool.
You're not a mammy, though, Meg. You're not think me a fine fella.
Don't be daft.
One day, just you wait and see. Then you'll want me.
I'll take thee now, lad, just the way thou art.
Oh, I'm nobody now, but I shall be. Just you wait.
Oh, my love.
Meg, I'm going abroad.
Abroad?
To fight in Flanders for the one true faith.
No, you'll be killed.
Yeah, I shall die of boredom if I stay at home.
Oh.
Now listen, what is there for me here, apart from you? What is there? I've no money or precious little. Nowhere near enough, anyway. And I'm a Roman Catholic. What chance have I in Protestant England?
But what about me?
I'll come back for you, Meg.
Oh,
I will. I swear it. If you still have me.
Oh, Guy.
And I'll be rich. And famous. A captain, maybe.
A captain?
Aye. In the Imperial Army of the Archdukes Albert and Isabella of Austria. Think of it.
Captain Fawkes?
Sounds good. Don't you think?
Captain Guy Fawkes.
All right, all right, come on. Stir thyself, Master Fawkes or Johnson or whatever thy name is today. Beelzebub himself, I shouldn't wonder.
Oh.
Still asleep, my little papist? Still asleep?
What time is it?
What time is it, he says? For all the world, like some great lord, has summoned to his breakfast. My word, but you're a cool customer for a keeper of the Hellfire. A cool customer, no mistake. What time is it, indeed? No time for dreams, I'll tell you that. Now, come on. I'll be standing round here all day. There's work to be done. And you've got a visitor.
All right, damn you, I'm coming.
Damn me. Damn me, sis. Oh, no, it'll not be me as his dame. I'm just an honest, simple jailer and a faithful servant of His Majesty the King. And may God be praised for saving him from the likes of you. So says I, and so says the Earl of London with me.
Still talking, are they? They're still ringing their bells.
Oh, the bells is stopped, but the talk goes on. There, wherever you turn, there's but one sole topic of conversation. You. You and your devilish designs. Oh, in no such commotion there's been since the great Sir Walter himself was finally brought to account for his crimes. And here you are, neighbours together. There's wicked a pair as ever lodged under one good roof. But tell me, Master Johnson Fawkes, tell me as knows how to keep a secret. They say the old fox himself did have a hand in it. They say old Watt himself was chiefest instigator in the old conspiracy. Now, is there any truth in that? Tell me, come on.
And if there was, I'd be as great a fool for telling you as you'd be for believing it.
Oh, all right, only ask, no harm in that. I dare say they'll be arm enough when they come to pulling up your secrets. Then you blab and glad to do it. So you say now. So they all say, till they're introduced to Mistress Stretchbones. Then the bravado leaves them quick enough. Oh, no, I've seen it. She has a way of drawing out the truth, my lady Stretchbones. A fine way, and no mistake.
Save your boasting, Master Jailer, for those with cause to fear it. My conscience is clear. As God's my witness, I've done no harm
to no man. No harm, he says. That's a right one. You can tell that to Sir Robert Crookbank, me friend. They do say he likes a good laugh.
Cecil, here.
And waiting. So pull on your boots and quick about it, for they do also say waiting does not improve his temper.
Cecil, you say?
Cecil, I say, and Cecil, I mean. You know the one, Earl of Salisbury, and Lord High Treasurer to the King's Privy Council. He's another man with a lot of names. You two should get on well together.
Ah, Fawkes, my dear fellow.
Lord?
Come and sit down, won't you? And how do I find you today?
Oh, well enough, thank you, my lord.
Well enough? Oh, come, come. I know Sir William here does not exactly find guests knocking at his door. Yet, all the same, I hope you have no charge against his hospitality.
No, thank you, my lord. I have almost everything I need.
Quite so. There will be necessarily some privations to endure. We would not want to excite suspicion and loose comment, would we now? Sure you understand.
Lord.
Unfortunately, not even Sir William's men are entirely above the occasional indiscretion, especially when strong drink has freed their tongues. Is that not so, Sir William?
Regrettably so, my lord.
There is something I would mention.
Yes?
The gentleman who was here yesterday...
Oh, no gentleman, Fawkes. Our excellent Attorney General is now Sir Edward Cook, a Knight of the Realm. Do you have some reason to dispute his treatment of you?
No. No, not exactly. Well, my lord, he just seemed...
A little harsh?
Well...
Oh, that is just his way. You mustn't mind it. If he's apt, how shall I say, to be sometimes overzealous in the execution of his duties, it is a fault we must count to the common good. After all, it is to him we look, is it not, to quarry out all heretics and foul traitors to the crown? And each of us has his particular part to play in this present enterprise.
Yes, my lord, of course, but he seemed, I don't know, almost to believe my part in this.
Well, of course he believes it. Think you that he could properly do his job if he did not?
No, my lord, I suppose not.
Oh, but you are hurt, man.
Oh, tis nothing, my lord, a scratch merely.
A matter of zeal again, my lord. One of our yeomen, I regret to say, being much angered at the prisoner upon his arrival here on Tuesday morning, thrust out at him with his halberd, catching him a slight nick upon the wrist.
Ah, yes, the strength of popular opinion against our Catholic conspirators is even more vigorous than I could have hoped for. It is indeed the most pleasing element in the whole affair.
Not too vigorous, I hope, my lord. I should fear for my safety otherwise.
Why, Fawkes? You did not think that they would love you for your pains. As to your safety, well, I'm sure you have no need to doubt it while you are in Sir William's care.
Indeed, no, my lord.
Oh, and as to that care, you will be pleased to hear that shortly you are to share it with a friend of yours.
Oh?
Hmm. Master Winter will be joining you tomorrow, is it not?
Tomorrow morning,
Master Thomas Winter? Or his brother?
Thomas. Brother Robert, regrettably, is still at large.
And Percy, Catesby, the others?
Oh, they met and... Sorry to say, with a slight accident. Another case of excessive zeal.
Accident?
But now to work, Master Fawkes. You must earn your keep, after all. Now, I have here your fifth confession, in which you name the Jesuits Garnet and Gerard as prime movers in the treason, together with Owen, the Archduke's intelligencer, with whom you met in Flanders.
Yes, you wish me to copy it out as before?
No. No, this one, I think, must be presented as a somewhat more painful extraction. After all, you are hardly likely to have given such revealing information of your own free will.
No, of course. Just my signature, then.
Please.
As Fawkes, my lord, or Johnson?
Oh, come, come. We've already established you as Fawkes 2 days ago, have we not? We can hardly have you become Johnson again. That would seem most strange.
Yes, forgive me, my lord. I confess I'm somewhat confused at present.
Oh, quite understandable in the circumstances. But there is no need for you to trouble yourself with matters which are my discharge. Your signature is all that we require for the time being. Oh, and if you could perhaps effect it so that it might seem to come from one whose hand is somewhat unsteady.
Unsteady, my lord?
Yes, from such forms of persuasion as are commonly expected to have been employed in cases of this kind.
Oh, so you mean I've been tortured?
Yeah, well, for example...
Let me see.
Perhaps, my lord, the prisoner should practice first upon another piece of paper, lest he should spoil the document.
Ah, quite so, Sir William. Yes, an excellent suggestion. Do you have such a piece of paper?
Yes, I shall bring it directly.
Yes?
My lord, one further question I would ask.
It's about the pardon.
Ah, yes, of course.
Percy said...
Well, then I'm sure you can trust a man like Captain Percy to be as good as his word.
Yes, of course.
So, there's nothing for you to worry about, and I can assure you what he said was on my authority.
Oh. What did you mean, my lord? An accident?
Ah!
Your piece of paper, my lord.
Thank you, Sir William. Fox?
Yes. Unsteady, you said.
Indeed.
Like this?
No, not exactly. No. What do you say, Sir William?
A little too much overdone, my lord, in my opinion.
Yes, great pity the wound is not upon the other hand. It might have helped. You couldn't, I suppose, use your left hand, could you?
I could try.
Oh, no, that won't do at all, I'm afraid. No, most unconvincing. Child of four could manage it better.
Well, I'm sorry, my lord, but...
Yes, I'm sorry too, Fawkes, I truly am. I only hope that you will realise that this was quite unavoidable. Sir William?
My lord, just spread your hand out on the table, like so.
Huh?
That's it.
No, Sir William... For the outward part, it all progresses most smoothly. Mm. The king has held the forefront of the stage, encouraging us all by his fine example, calling down God's wrath upon these traitors with the one hand, while offering up his royal thanks for the divine assistance with the other. Indeed, I think he half suspects that all is not as we would have it seem. Mm. But he's more intent to seize the opportunity for kingship than know the manner of its making. No. It is the news from Holbeach that causes me concern.
Indeed, my lord. A most regrettable business.
And a piece of work most roundly botched. Walsh is a fool. Or I am, for relying upon him.
Oh, by no means, my lord. It was a task that fell within his jurisdiction. A pity only that it did not fall within his competence also.
Well, we must yet hope to turn this trick to our advantage. Winter, I think, is our most awkward survivor. Mm-hmm. A man of some intelligence. By putting him with Fawkes, we may hope to encourage them both and so nip all suspicions in the bud.
Forgive me, my lord, but Fawkes himself is scarcely in the mood now for encouragement, either to give or to receive.
Oh, his hand will heal. And even before it does so, his hopes will gull his fears. He is a man, Sir William, who needs to believe.
Oh, Guy.
Do you not think me a fine fella? A fine fella? A fine fella? A captain in the imperial army of the Archdukes Albert and Isabella, fighting in Flanders for the one true faith.
Monsieur Fox! Monsieur Fox! There are two gentlemen who wish to see you.
Oh, I wish to be seen.
Ah, very fine gentlemen they are, by the look of them. I wonder you can afford not to see them.
You are a most impertinent dog, Shalalo. For 2 pence I will cut out your tongue.
But yet you sold your sword for 3 pence on Wednesday last.
Oh, man must eat.
That's what they all say. All right, good sirs. He will see you now.
My God. Folks, is it you?
Excuse me, sir. There must be some mistake.
Do you not recognize me, Guy?
I'm sorry, I've had much to drink.
It's Tom Winter, Guy. Come from England with your old schoolfellow, Kit Wright.
Right. Winter? Is it really you?
Yes. It's really us.
Landlord, 3 large jugs of your best ale, if you please.
Your friend, Monsieur Fox, has not yet paid for his last drink, sir, nor many more besides.
The fox on you, landlord, will you never leave me be with your ceaseless grab of money?
I shall pay for everything, owes you, landlord.
You are a true gentleman, sir, which is a rare thing hereabouts in these wicked times. Be seated, sir, and take your ease. Hans! Recti go to Funet Vesta.
Well, Guy, our beer will be along presently. So tell me, how do you do? You look a little changed from when I saw you last.
Changed? Faith, were I to take an oath upon it, I would swear I sat across the table from Guy Fawkes' ghost.
No. No, he was my grandfather. Hmm? I'm the ghost of the ghost of the ghost of Guy Fawkes. I'm not a little changed, I'm much changed. You're not changed at all. You're just as I remember you. Oh, are you really here? Are you not just a fond dream of mine?
Gentle, Guy, stop, I beg you.
You're not my dream.
I am flesh and blood, Guy, look.
It is Tom Winter, Guy. Tom Winter and Kit Wright come from England. I'm afraid he cannot recognize us.
From England? Aye, I'm from England. 9 years from England, 9 years dead in his stinking vault. I know. You are Tom Winter and Kit Wright come from England. Should I be overjoyed? Am I in fit condition to be seen by my friends from England? Should I not rather hide my head in shame? But since you're here, you're here. And you're welcome to Flanders. Ah, what news from gentle England, huh?
A king sits on the throne in England now.
A king? Mm-hmm. Oh, when I left England, she was a virgin queen. But she then sprouted beard and codpiece to call herself a king, huh?
Yeah, she sprouts only maggots, Guy. Oh. Having passed away very early on the third Friday in March. With never a word to say who should come after. But a new monarch was soon found by the royal councillors, who were very afraid of having nobody to counsel. And so, upon the Thursday, it was high treason to cry, God save King James of England. And upon the Friday, high treason not to cry.
And what manner of man is this new king?
Oh, most royal, having already been a king.
Hmm?
But also Scotch, having been king in a most wild and barbarous land somewhat to the north. I've not clapped eyes upon him myself. But they do say he has a large tongue, slobbering lips and weak legs. However, his new people did receive him most royally, lining the road by which he came, cheering, clapping their hands, calling out all manner of blessings upon him and his family. In every town he came to on the way, the church bells were rung, poetic welcomes were declaimed, school children threw flowers in his path, and rich presents were showered upon him by the loyal citizens.
And how did the king return these kindnesses?
Oh, with equal prodigality. Throughout his whole coming into England, which was very long, as he dallied everywhere at noble houses to hawk and hunt, which is said to be his chief pleasure, he made many knights. So many, indeed, there was scarce a person knelt at his feet without, he said, "Arise, Sir Dick! Arise, Sir Harry!" Until at last some wit made up this joke, which travelled so fast that for a while it was on the lips of everybody.
Huh?
It's two friends are talking. "Look yonder," says the first. "Unless I'm mistaken, there walks a gentleman." "No, no," replies the second. "I think he's but a knight."
Oh, that's a good joke, my friend. Indeed, I'm most wonderfully uplifted to see you both. Be a lot of strength to this happy reunion.
So, Guy, you have not found the fortune you hoped for.
Quite the reverse. I fear I've found my utter ruin.
Not so hasty, Guy.
Is it hasty after 9 years? No, my friend. If you stay here for only 9 days, you'll wish yourself home again. After 9 months, you'll begin to wonder how much longer you can last. And after 9 years, you'll know that you must stay here till you die. Indeed, after 9 years of this, death cannot come too soon.
Is the fighting so terrible?
Oh, the fighting is dull and stupid. There are no dashing cavalry charges, no dazzling sword play. Just rank upon rank of musketry and cannon ranged against each other. And the only alteration is that in the one campaign, you recapture the fortress you lost in the last campaign. And in the next, you lose it again. Neither side is strong enough to defeat the other, and so the fighting must go on forever. But a man can accept the fighting after a while. There's even a chance that he might find that sweet release. No, it is the long, cold winters that sap a man's spirit. Then there is no fighting, so we're not paid. No food and clothing for us, and no dry shelter to lay our heads down. Many men go over to the other side in the winter for promises of food and money which never come. So that both sides have become indistinguishable from one another, with Protestant and Catholic fighting side by side against Catholic and Protestant. It's no longer possible to tell where a man's true sympathies lie, if he has any still. Few men give much thought to God, Thomas, when their bellies are empty and their bodies damp and cold.
What would you say to the chance of leaving all this behind for a little while?
Oh, I should say amen with all my heart, even if it were only for one short hour.
It would be for several months, in fact. Spent journeying in Spain. And if you perform the task well, there is hope that you will find that permanent release you so desire. Not in death, but in a safe return to England.
Oh, good Thomas, for such a dream as that, I'd gladly die 100 deaths.
Well, listen closely then, for the time is short and the matter urgent.
Now on top of the barrel.
Excellent, yes. And the iron bars, you remember to put them underneath the wood?
Yes, the iron bars are all underneath the wood.
Ah, upon my soul, what a commotion it would make, huh?
What would make?
All this, if that were really gunpowder in those barrels.
Aye, but it's not, is it?
Well, of course it's not. We don't want anything to go amiss.
Nothing but a barge load of Lambeth soil. What a joke.
My lord, Cecil would then have our guts for garters, and no mistake.
How do we know he won't do that anyway?
My dear Fawkes, why should he? When we have done our service to the state, we shall be smuggled out to safety and a rich retirement, our pockets heavy with the fruits of our endeavour. For myself, I shall have a brace of Paris whores upon my first night, depend upon it. And what will you do with your share, Master Johnson?
I shall spend it when I have it in my hand, if I ever do.
Why, Fawkes, do not be so glum. Your spirit should be uplifted with your hopes and expectations. You are a king's man now, or Master Secretary Cecil's, which is much the same thing. What's wrong?
3,000 billets of wood's what's wrong. And half a ton of iron, rowing back and forth across the river is what's wrong. Till my arms are on fire and my head spinning, fetching 36 barrels of earth, one satchelful at a time. Sleeping down here, what's wrong? In the stinking damp, because you can't be bothered to go back to the Strand, and you want the bed, and I get the straw that came out of the henhouse. That's what's wrong, Thomas Percy.
I've told you before, don't call me that. You're supposed to be my serving man, not my comrade in arms.
Don't I know it? Anyway, who's there to hear?
Walls can hear, fool, and windows can see.
Well, there ain't no windows in here. You've had them all boarded up.
Don't be clever, Fawkes.
Johnson. Johnson, I'm supposed to be your damn serving man, remember?
Indeed. Would you rather be back in Flanders, fighting the Holy War? It could be arranged, you know. I could arrange it, if you prefer. No. You count yourself lucky, my fine friend. You count yourself very lucky indeed.
And be not so nice. Why, you're not even fit to be my serving man, you, whoever you are. Just a soldier, a stupid pikeman, the son of a clerk.
While I, as everyone knows, am of the House of Percy. Earls of Northumberland, peers of the realm.
The pain, 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 the pain.
Anything is better than this.
Anything. Anything.
Anything.
The pain,
anything.
The pain,
The pain, the pain.
You are a fool.
My hand!
Guy? Is it you? Are you hurt?
What?
Guy, it's me. Thomas. It's Tom Winter, Guy.
Tom Winter?
Oh, Guy. I'm glad to see you.
I was just dreaming of you.
Were you?
And here you are. Oh, is it you? Is it really you?
Yes, yes, it's really me.
Oh.
Thank God. What have you done to your hand?
Oh, it's nothing. It's an accident, but you, you're badly hurt.
No, it's only a musket ball lodged within my shoulder a short while. It is mending now.
How so? What happened?
Oh, God, I wish I knew.
The rebellion?
The rebellion. The great, glorious, ridiculous rebellion.
Oh, Tom. It wasn't supposed to be successful.
It wasn't supposed to be a bloody shambles either.
A shambles?
Aye.
What happened?
It was at Hull Beach. Stephen Littleton's house.
Aye.
We were resting there the night, having ridden all the day from my brother Robert's place in Huddington. Uh-huh. And before that, from Grant's at Norbrook, having taken fresh mounts from the castle stables of Warwick the previous night. It was a raggle-taggle party by this time, Guy, I can tell you. Only those of us who were in the secret were able to hold our heads up, and that with great difficulty, for we were all most cruelly tired. But those who believed our so-called cause had much the worst of it, for only a 3 times fool could deny by now that our glorious rebellion was but a dismal failure. No one had joined us. Not so much as a single man. Instead, we were growing smaller as some among us began to slip away to safety. Well, if their hearts were fainter, their wits were not. They'd begun to smell the rat. It was a fitful night. I could not sleep at all. I was up early, even as the light showed over the trees. But Thomas Percy was up before me. I found him downstairs, peering from a window. Soft, he said, we had discovered. When I looked out quickly where he pointed, I could see the campfires ringed around us. Could hear from the open doorway the sound of men and horses waking to the day. Go out, he said. Go out and see if you can guess their plans. I will stay here and prepare a council room. We must decide what we will do. Do, I asked him. What choice is there now? Surely we must surrender. To fight them would be madness. He looked at me with that wild gleaming in his eye that makes you think that he is truly bedlam mad, and answered,
a little token resistance might not go amiss for appearance sake. Look not so gloomy, Thomas. It will work out for the best, you see.
In truth, I did not have the heart to argue. All my thoughts were that soon now it would be over, this madcap chase, this fake rebellion. All I wanted then was a dry bed and 10 hours to myself. Ah. Oh. I went out to see what I could see.
That was a dangerous enterprise.
No, Guy. No. The danger was all within.
How so?
By foul treachery. How else?
Huh?
By base deceit and envy. And I know not what else. I was outside, creeping through the gardens, wary of ambush at every turn.
Huh?
And of a sudden, such an explosion as I thought my heart had burst.
Explosion?
And no sooner had I found me all of one piece and quite unharmed than my hot blood froze within me and chilled me to the very soul. The blast had been behind me, Guy. It had come from inside the house.
Inside?
I ran back at once. As I reached the stable yard, I met Stephen Littleton running out, his face and manner quite distraught. It is the end, he cried, the end of all our hopes. I will stay no longer, and you too will go if you have any sense left in you. Go while you have the chance. But I seized him by the shoulders and demanded of him what had happened. He would only say a terrible accident and repeat his advice to go while there was still time. I left him and ran into the room. It was a kind of outhouse, joining to the stables where the meeting had taken place.
What a scene of desolation awaited me. The air was still thick with smoke billowing up through a hole in the roof, and six of our comrades, Grant, Morgan, Rookwood, Chris and John Wright, and Robin Catesby, scattered on the floor.
Dead?
No. No. By a miracle, they were all alive, and burned only. Oh, Grant had lost his eyes, and his face was much disfigured.
Oh, no.
'Twas Robin Catesby seemed the least hurt. Oh, too much angered to feel it. He shouted when he saw me in a voice like God's own thunder.
Percy! Where is Percy?
Percy?
I ran out into the yard and found him coming from the stable leading a horse, all saddled and bridled and ready to go.
What?
Not so fast, Thomas Percy, I told him. We have friends in there who need our help. My voice was as calm as I could make it, but I tell you, folks, I would have fain broke his neck for him.
What did he say?
Or some feeble protest that his horse was frighted by the blast, and he wished only to calm it. Well, we kept close by him after that. One man at least was always by his side. His hopes of escape were quite overthrown.
Oh, well, perhaps it was true about the horse.
Was it? I think not. And nor will you, when you have heard what Robin Catesby told me.
Huh?
There was a brazier in the room to warm it for the meeting. And when they came in, the fire was low, so Catesby took the poker to it, stirring it up before he sat down. Now, 15 seconds later, the whole device exploded.
Device?
There was powder underneath the fire, concealed in a barrel on which it stood. 2 bags of it, Guy. 15-pound bags.
What?
A few hot cinders falling through from Catesby's raking took hold and set it off. I found one of the bags afterwards outside in the yard, blown clear through the roof. It was damp, and that was the miracle. If it had gone off as it was surely meant to, it would have killed them all.
But who? Why?
As to the why, we can only guess and fear. But for the who, I will ask you this. Who placed the fire there? And who alone had not yet joined them in the room?
Percy?
Percy.
But why? He could have made his escape without first murdering the rest. What did he have to fear from them?
Not he, Guy, but he who pulled his strings.
Aye?
Aye. And all our strings. He has everything to fear from those who live to tell the tale.
Oh, no. No, Tom, I can't believe it. Without his traitors, he can have no trial. And without a trial, he'll have much less a fame to crown his labours.
Without a trial and an execution.
No, Tom. The king's mercy will prevail. We were promised.
And so we were. And so, too, were Percy, Catesby and the Wrights. Now hear what fell to them.
Huh?
'Twas already afternoon when we decided at last to give ourselves up. Our Sheriff Walsh's men were all around the house. Some 200 or 300 of them, it seemed. But they made no move against us. We thought they'd merely come to take us into custody. We thought they were only waiting for our quiet surrender. We stepped outside, but softly, so as not to cause alarm. All was still and quiet. Catesby was first, with Percy held close by him, for he did not trust him even now. Next, Chris Wright. Myself, John Grant, still blinded, on Rookwood's arm, and John Wright, last of all. And every man of us naked of all arms, shirt-sleeved, even in the shivering air, to plainly show we meant no harm. And suddenly...
Over here!
Shoulder!
Oh, God, no!
I fell back against the corner of the house. I saw them all go down. John Wright first, great blood pumping from his chest. Chris next, his head half blown away. Then Rookwood hit Ida 4 or 5 times, spinning like a marionette. And John Grant also wounded. Catesby, holding out his golden crucifix in one hand and Percy tight in the other, called for them to hold the fire.
For God's sake!
No!
The one bullet took them both together.
Dead?
Aye. Dead. And John and Chris Wright, too.
Oh, Chris.
Grant and Rookwood were still alive when last I saw them.
A mistake. It must have been.
And Percy's booby trap also a mistake? And think on this also. Who put him up to it? Holding out, no doubt, the certain promise of his own escape. Think you that Cecil would fail to give most careful orders if he had wanted Percy taken unharmed?
No. No, surely it is better for Cecil without both Percy and Catesby. They will like to talk too much. But we, if we give no cause for offence, give no cause neither for him not to keep his word.
And have you had his word?
But Percy said, like those before us in the Rawley plot, Cobham, Grey, Markham, reprieved upon the scaffold, Percy swore it.
And what price Thomas Percy's swearing now?
Aye, but we could show a few holes in the story, could we not?
Oh, God.
All that so-called powder, for one thing, kept in that cellar 6 months or more, so close to the river. Why, I've slept in that cellar, Tom. The damp runs down the walls. Real powder would have been ruined in a week. And then, the lack of secrecy. 2 dozen people passing through that courtyard every day. The keeper and the porter living right beside it. How could we have hoped to hide our preparations? Aye, and then there's the matter of these confessions they keep concocting. The contradictions, one to another, you'll see. Why, they can't even decide if I was taken in the cellar itself or from Percy's room above it. And Wade's men, waiting in a boat to bring me here. Ready and waiting, Tom, for what was meant to be a great surprise. Oh, have no fear. We can do some talking, too.
And be dispatched like Catesby and Percy for our pains?
No, Tom. They mean us no harm. I'm sure of it.
And your hand?
Ah, that was necessary. They must make it look good.
Ah, yes, but how good? As good as a trial? Oh, certainly. As good as a conviction, no doubt, having gone so far. And a sentence? How can they stop at that? And then, best of all...
Tom, Catholic martyrs are no use to Cecil.
Dead Catholics are only martyrs in the eyes of live ones. And you know there are not so many of those as Lord Salisbury would have us all imagine. And soon there will be even less, now there is this new excuse to hunt them down. There will be such hatred stirred up that only Catholic blood will satisfy.
Well, not ours. We are no prize for Cecil. Digby, Rookwood, your brother Robert, yes, the bigger squires. Not little men like us.
And were Lords Grey and Cobham little men? Sir Griffin Markham and Sir Walter Raleigh? No, Guy. 'Tis not the little men who taste a king's mercy.
And what say our loyal subjects today?
Your Majesty, what they were saying yesterday and what they will say tomorrow. But to divine the plot from such scant evidence is evidence truly of your own divinity.
But this is parlous blasphemy. Divine, my Lord Suffolk, by nature of our royal blooded lineage, but no divinity. We are but a king.
And such a king, your Majesty, as we have never seen the like within these isles. Aye, and in no other country neither. Thou hast risen above us like the sun, ending our dark night with thy powerful rays, warming our hearts and thoughts with thy beneficent wisdom, uniting all differences, leading us boldly forward to increased prosperity and might, whom none can gainsay.
Good Worcester, your ever most excellent sauce to the meat of kingly cares. But I fear your too rich words may overmuch inflate me, causing me to fart out such conceits as were not fitting to the dignity of kings. Oh, thank you, all most true and faithful bearers. And look, where comes the brightest of you, ever apt unto the moment, our excellent Earl of Salisbury. How now, my little beagle?
Most gracious, magnificent, and all-encompassing Majesty.
Take care. I feel a sudden flatuosity coming on.
Your Majesty?
Tis but a jest we were having before you arrived. Do not concern yourself. Tell us, rather, what news of our horrid traitors today?
Your Majesty, most excellent news. The manner of their foul conspiracy appears more clearly at each examination, together with the names of those who are most closely implicated. The matter could not progress more smoothly, I do assure you.
Not even if you had contrived the thing yourself, eh? Eh?
Most gracious Majesty, I would crave a private word.
Aye, very well, if you must. Good, my lords, we bid you leave us.
God save you, keep you, watch over you and guide you, most wise and royal majesty.
I was to thank you, thank you. Well?
Forgive me, Your Majesty, but is it really necessary for the boy to remain?
Steenie! Why, Parrot, are you so jealous of our company you would wish to banish poor Steenie also? My wee boy. A beautiful wee man.
Your Majesty.
Tell me, though, Salisbury, he is beautiful, is he not?
Your Majesty.
Is he not?
Yes, Your Majesty.
Yes, Your Majesty. And I'll tell you this. Such beauty is but skin deep, the merest coating only for a mind so dull that nothing but blind loyalty knows its place there. Is that not so, Steenie?
My liege?
You wouldn't blab our secrets, boy, would you?
Blab, my liege?
You see? And who would he blab them to? Being always by my side. Tell me that, Parrot.
In truth, Your Majesty, I cannot.
So then, proceed with your business.
Thank you, Your Majesty. Your Majesty...
Oh, make not a speech of it, Parrot, I pray you. We've had a most tiring day. We really ought to be abed. This present calamity so narrowly averted hath quite drained us of our usual vigour.
As Your Majesty wishes. Briefly, then, the Papist Lords Montague, Mordaunt, and Stoughton are newly committed to the Tower, together with the greatest prize of all, Harry Percy, Earl of Northumberland.
Ah!
Tainted by his conspirator kinsman, Thomas Percy.
Oh, 'tis well done.
Now we must strengthen our pursuit of Garnet and the Jesuits.
Good, 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 good.
And make immediate representation to the Archdukes for the delivering up to us of their man, Owen, from Flanders.
Aye, Flanders. A very seabed of treachery against our person and our realm.
Just so.
A very nest of vipers. Vipers, all of them.
Your Majesty, there is but one sure remedy for vipers.
Tell me.
Crush them beneath your boot, Your Majesty, before they can bite.
Most excellent counsel. How shall it be done?
Those who work from without to undermine Your Majesty, to disrupt the people, sowing discord and dissatisfaction, stirring up greed, envy, and malice one to another, such as we have seen in this present treason, this senseless act of violence, this devilish conspiracy, these men without need those within who are pliant to their commands, those who owe allegiance elsewhere.
The Papists.
The Papists, my lord, exactly. We must move against them at home, as we work against them abroad, and we must do it now, while the iron is hot, lest we appear milkish and weak-stomached.
Never!
Lest we seem, by our inaction, to allow their continued opposition to your authority.
No!
Your Majesty, you must be strong. Gird up your mighty loins to brace yourself against the foe. The security of the realm depends upon it, upon you alone. Be godlike in the dispensation of your wrath. Reach out your hand against your enemies. Strike them down and make them as the dust beneath your feet. Only you can do this, my lord. Only you.
Aye.
One church, Your Majesty. One state. One king.
One church. One state. One king.
Northumberland?
Raleigh. It's good to see you.
And you too, Harry. I would say welcome to my latest home. Except that you would not agree, perhaps.
Indeed, Walter. I had thought when next we met, it would be upon your release rather than my detainment.
That would, I fear, have been a long wait. Rather must we smile upon the chance that brings us two together once more.
I do, Walter.
Besides, 'tis not so bad in here. I have most of my creature comforts, as you see. Even Bess and the children are allowed to visit me from time to time. And in between those times, much time for thought.
You must regret your liberty a great deal.
In truth, Harry, I long for the open country. And the sea, most of all. However, I am permitted to walk a little outdoors. And when the wind is easterly, I can smell the sea upon it.
Indeed, Walter, your walking has become quite famous, appearing as you do, I hear, upon a high wall, where crowds may see you from the street.
Do they? I had not noticed. But 'twas a most merry answer to our upstart Lord Lieutenant of the Tower, Sir William Wade, who upon his arrival here in August did order that same wall put up to afford me greater inconvenience and the withdrawing, as he put it, of my unwonted privileges. Yes, annoying fellow, but easily provoked. I do get some passing sport from him.
Has he been here only since August? I did not realize.
Aye, since August only.
Who is he? I do not think I know him.
He was clerk to the Privy Council in Her Majesty's time.
Good God, yes, of course.
And since reserved as Cecil's man.
Is that so?
Most specifically in the gathering or manufacture of intelligence.
Ah.
How goes it with the world, Harry?
Oh, most strange and different, Walter. There is a new mood stirring which the king has somehow helped to agitate rather than calm, not through any action of his own as such, but rather by his lack of action. The people look to their sovereign for strong leadership as they had from Gloriana. Indeed, we miss her now, I think, more than we have ever done.
Amen to that.
And I fear me, James of Scotland has not the wisdom nor the greatness to match such leadership.
No. Yet will he ape it if he can. And there is one most apt to teach him.
Cecil, you mean?
Why else do you think you are here?
Well, I don't know, Walter. For the life of me. I'm told that my supposed kinsman, Thomas Percy, was in some way caught up in this late rebellion, but I fail to see...
Harry, forgive me. But was he or not a relative of yours?
Thomas Percy? No, not really. Well, maybe, I don't know. He called himself my uncle's bastard. It wasn't very easy to prove, one way or the other.
I see.
But, good God, Walter, you don't think...
He called himself your kinsman? He visited your house, yes?
Yes.
When was the last occasion?
What? Oh, it must have been about the beginning of the month. Just before this whole thing was discovered.
How soon before?
The day before, as a matter of fact.
Then 'twas done deliberately, Harry. You may depend upon it.
Ah, that's preposterous. I'm not even a Catholic, nor ever have been.
Think you that actual guilt has anything to do with it? Think you that I was guilty?
God, what?
Taken in the self-same snare these 2 years hence, tarred with a false brush, placed in hireling's hands by envious Cecil, and now, you too, good Northumberland.
In God's name, Walter, think you they mean to keep me here?
Oh, Harry, wake up, man. 'Tis Robert Cecil rules this country now.
Well, then, yet 'tis a poor thing when we cannot distinguish friends from enemies.
It is the price of modern politics, Harry. If the people want strong leadership...
And is it strong leadership to fabricate an entire conspiracy?
Strong enough, I fear.
No, Walter, 'twill never be believed.
Are you so sure? A plot to carry off a king so recently enthroned, methinks 'twill be believed quite well enough.
Well, to cast my cousin Thomas and his friends in such a villainous role is quite absurd. They are wild young men, no doubt, a little headstrong, a trifle reckless. But to conceive of such a horrible crime...
It makes no difference, Harry. They will be painted in such bold colours, not even their own mothers will recognise them.
You are right, of course.
Come look. From over here, you can see the window where 2 of them are kept.
Really?
Indeed. One of them can often be seen there looking out.
Always the same one?
As far as I can tell, these eyes are not as young as they were.
I see him. Yes. There he is.
Can you recognize him?
No, I don't think I know him. It's hard to be sure.
No matter. The whole world will know him soon enough, poor devil.
Come away from that window, Guy, for God's sake.
It does no harm.
It will not give you freedom to gaze upon it.
Breathe the air fresh off the river. When the wind is in the right direction, you can even smell the sea.
For my part, I would forget it. Forget it all exists.
Besides, Sir Walter is due upon the wall about this hour.
How do you know in here what hour it is?
Where the shadow falls from the angle of that buttress is the most perfect sundial. When it reaches the far side of that archway over there, it is about midday.
But there is no sun today.
There might be.
What, in the middle of December?
There might be.
Man, you're a dreamer.
Am might even wave to me again.
Guy, I told you, Rawley does not wave to the likes of you. 'Tis a movement he has, as if to brush away flies.
In the middle of December?
No, Guy, not real flies.
Oh, imagine, though, a man like that, waving to Guy Fawkes.
'Tis a movement common among courtiers and the highly born.
I often used to think, you know, when I was a lad, oh, to be like Walter Rawley, famous and all.
Well, you got your wish. Much good may it do you.
Oh, we're not famous, Tom, not like that.
No, not like that.
Aye. But Rawley was nothing once, when first he came to London.
30, 40 years ago. Times have changed, Guy. They have no need of heroes now. They hunt them down instead.
Hmm. You mean like Father Garnet?
Like Father Garnet and all his gentle band.
What was he like? I never met him.
As gentle, godly, devout a man as ever you could hope to know. A true Christian, a man of peace.
Yeah, not much peace for him now.
20 years, Guy. 20 years in this country. And never more than 3 or 4 nights in the same bed.
Perhaps he will escape again.
Perhaps.
A good man, you say?
As good a man as ever walked this earth.
Then God will protect him.
It was his goodness was his own undoing. His faith and trust in men like us.
Like us?
Catesby involved him in the plot, Guy. He told the whole thing in confession to one of Garnet's priests, which he could not refuse, and which he then himself confessed to Father Garnet, who should have told what he knew but could not for the vow of secrecy. And so they will say he harboured the treason, and he cannot deny it.
Oh, that's just like Catesby. There was a man eaten up with his own ambition.
And were we not also with ours?
But Catesby was dangerous.
And did he not make us dangerous too?
Us?
Yes, Guy. You with your lantern and your powder train were every bit as dangerous as Robin Catesby with his false confession.
With 36 barrels of earth, dangerous to whom?
To honest men, such as we are not. Turn it which way you choose.
We did only as we were instructed to do.
To what end, man? Did you never stop to consider that?
Did you?
Many times, Guy. Many times. But only when it was already too late.
We had no choice, Tom. There was no other way if we wanted to advance ourselves. Some service to the state, it was the only way. Same for everybody. Either you're for it or against it. There is no choice.
No choice? Aye. How well I remember. The bare trees, etched in frost, even in the middle of the day. Frost in the hedgerows. Ice on the pond, the birds huddled against the cold. My breath, my clouds of hot steam hanging in the dead still air. The house looking somehow timeless. Innocent. Oblivious of the dark secrets being hatched between its walls. Myself equally unaware. Believing myself come to see old friends again after 2 long years travelling abroad. And those 2 friends, standing at the hearth's blaze, waiting for me, as though they would help shovel me in.
Come, Thomas. Stand by the fire. Warm yourself. You look half frozen.
Indeed, Robin. I think I'm 3/4 frozen at the very least. How are you both?
Oh, for myself, I'm as well as ever. But Tresham here is troubled by a slight stomachache, are you not, Francis?
Yeah, if he were mine, Catesby, I would sack that cook of yours.
Ah, you still have the same poisoner then, eh, Robin? The one who puts salt in his puddings instead of sugar.
You remember that. Ah, Thomas, it's good to see you.
Yeah, and for me too.
Is it all of 2 years since we 3 last met in this room?
Upon my soul, Robin, it feels more like 20. My God, this world grows old and stale. And there is precious small advancement in it for young men of the true faith. We are hunted in our own country, deemed worthy only of indifference when abroad. Upon my life, I would know some remedy for this sickness.
Well, Thomas, much has changed with us since you've been away. You've heard, no doubt, of Essex's trial and execution.
It's not the exact cause and manner of it. But enough to know at once my mission was quite undermined. And there were many did shed a tear for this noble earl's sad fall.
Indeed, it must have taken the wind from your sails. But when the breeze swings about, then must the good sailor alter course accordingly.
Yeah, speak plainly, man, I do not follow your riddle. Mm.
Plainly, then. You stand before two of those who, being with Essex in this rebellion, were likewise convicted of the treason.
Treason?
So the victorious party sees fit to call it. And he who pays the minstrel, Thomas, calls the tune we must all dance to.
How did you then escape sentence of death, my brave friends?
With the simple chink of gold coins.
I won John Throckmorton, friend to both our families, interceded on our behalf. In addition to these bribes, we were required to pay a further sum as partial commuting of our sentence.
We were, together with several others, consigned under the heading of these that are fined and reserved to Her Majesty's use.
Good, my friends. I am truly glad that you are safe. It must have been a fearful time for you. But tell me, of my Lord Essex, how did he die?
Most strangely, to judge by the official reports. For he was executed at his own request in strictest privacy, with not one of his friends or kinsmen as witness.
What?
And whereas he behaved most brazenly at his trial, 'tis said he was overcome at the last by a most proper repentance for his folly.
He spoke of himself, 'tis said, as the greatest, the most vilest, and most unthankful traitor that had ever been in the land, and said he was fit to be spewed up by the Commonwealth for the foulness of an enterprise which was like a leprosy spread far and wide, infecting men.
By my right arm, that maggot Cecil is at work in this corruption.
Most certainly.
My God, you speak most prettily of this. As though 'twere nothing to you but a bunch of sweet-smelling lavender. You, who did stand at Essex's side, confident in the justness of his cause, do now mouth this slander like a nursery rhyme.
Essex is dead.
And is his memory to be so abused by those who call themselves his followers?
His memory is scant comfort to those of us who must survive.
Gentlemen, you begin to disgust me.
That is because you have omitted to look deeply into our circumstances and see the crumbling ground on which we stand.
Remember, we are constrained, Thomas. 'Tis mortal danger to take a single step except where we are permitted.
Our former allegiances are nothing where they work against our present interests.
We have no choice. Besides, Tom, this new horse will run better than the old one.
Now I begin to understand. You must think me a rare fool not to have caught your meaning at once. But I was not prepared for such two-faced roguery as I now see before me.
Thomas!
No! Your baseness fills me with such rage and loathing. I know not what reply to give you.
Indeed, it must seem a sudden alteration to you.
Sudden alteration? By my troth, Robin Catesby, it is the most dastardly betrayal I ever hoped to see. Surely this world is set upon its ears that a man's own friends to twist and turn like vipers and argue now the very cause that once they stood against so bravely.
There is a lot of water flowed under the bridge since your departure, Thomas, which is necessary to swim with the current.
At what expense to your soul, man? Are we not Catholics? Is not Robert Cecil the mortal enemy of all Catholics?
And is not that reason enough to shift? Are you so fond of popish ceremony that you would trade your life for it?
What a man holds in the secret depths of his heart, none can gainsay, not even Cecil. As to appearance, you have never scrupled to seem a true Protestant.
Nor have I ever openly betrayed my faith.
'Tis no betrayal. More nearly a constant state of vigilance. A careful watching of the chiefest enemies of the state.
Do not fence with words, Francis. Call yourself spies, for that is what you have become.
That is too crude a word, Thomas. The times have grown more subtle, and the victorious statesman has the need of greater and more intricate stratagems than the general on the battlefield. Statecraft is a hidden war, yes. Thomas. That he who would win that war must have prior knowledge of his enemy's intentions, must, in some cases, be able to predict, or even engender his very actions.
Dispute it how you will. It is plain that I endanger my own safety by staying 1 minute longer in your company, so I bid you good day and
hold your ground, Winter! You may go to the devil if you wish, but not until you have heard us out.
It is our desire to include you as one of our number, Thomas, rather than as one of our enemies. We are compelled to this service by the debt we owe the state for granting us both life and liberty. Our lives would be quite worthless if we did refuse. But your life is in no less a peril if you turn your back now. And this is not merely the best chance you will ever have to make a name for yourself. It is without doubt the last chance. You have spoken yourself of your disappointment in the harsh ways of the modern world. Do you not see that we must discard such threadbare notions as honor and chivalry, for they're the stuff of fairy tales and have no currency in these difficult times? Besides, man, here at last is the way to remove your obstacle brother and to restore the House of Winter to its former eminence. Join us as an intelligencer for the state, and you can work Brother Robert's downfall as surely as if you held a pistol at his head. Well,
what is it you would have me do?
Sir Robert has entrusted us with two immediate tasks. The first, to reinforce our numbers with trusty men who wear the outward garb of popery. The second, to send a small party to Spain under cover of such disguise, to collect such evidence as may be useful against those enemies of our realm as are living there, particularly the English Catholics, and most especially the English Jesuits, who are the most terrible threat to our security.
So it might conveniently be supposed.
Tis them or us, Tom? Indeed, tis them in any case. We must look to ourselves.
We propose, therefore, that as soon as you have rested and tended to your personal affairs, you go to Flanders with Chris Wright and seek out one Guy Fawkes, who is an ensign there in service of the Catholic army. Wright recommends him as most likely tractable material, and says you know him also.
Oh, for jealousy of my brother Robert and my father's inheritance. All this for that.
That's funny, isn't it? I always used to envy you.
Envy?
Having a rich father. My father left precious little for me when he died. Not that there was much when he was alive. My mother made sure when she remarried it was a man with prospects.
What did he do, your father? I know you must have told me, but I forget.
He was an advocate to the consistory court of the Archbishop of York.
A Protestant?
Huh? As true a Protestant as good King Harry himself.
That's rich.
There was my stepfather converted us to Rome. I must confess I never cared much either way. God is God, after all, isn't he?
What was he like, your real father?
A good, simple man, as I remember him. Mm. Nobody much.
No, was mine, for all his commercial enterprise.
Perhaps if they had been, we'd have found a quicker way out of all this.
If they had been, Guy, we would never have needed to get ourselves into it in the first place.
How's your shoulder?
It hurts. How is your hand?
It hurts.
We brought all this upon ourselves, you know. We are truly responsible.
No, Tom. We are victims only.
Victims?
You know what I mean.
I don't know anything, Guy. Not anymore.
What about Tresham? Do you think he will die of this sickness?
How should I know? You hear what our trusty turnkey says as well as I. What other news do we have? He gets hourly worser. Day after day. I swear, I never heard a man so able to go on getting worse and not die.
Exactly. Well, supposing he's not ill at all. Supposing it's just a stratagem to cover his escape.
And suppose it is not?
But it might be. You have to admit it might not.
What if it is? Do you suppose we shall all be falling ill and all be smuggled out to freedom until there are no traitors left to stand trial?
But they have others more highly prized than us. Rookwood, Digby Grant, your brother Robert. Men who were never given promise of escape. Men who joined the plot thinking it was real. They're the traitors.
They were tricked into it. Not told the full story till it was too late to turn round. Lured and trapped by you and me.
I trapped nobody.
In Spain?
I was in Spain in ignorance. I was tricked myself.
I know. And it was I who tricked you.
Oh, it wasn't your fault.
You, and my own brother, and my true friends. And Garnet and his priest I held there too, seeming the gentle follower, the true believer. Oh, God. Forgive me, for truly I do deserve to die.
Oh, now you're talking daft. Hey, look.
What?
It's Sir Walter. Oh. Quite a crowd has gathered.
I wonder if they'll look this way.
My lord?
Oh, nothing, Sir William. But that I see our bold Sir Walter still displays himself upon your wall.
Indeed, my lord. I would stop him if I could.
No. It's a harmless entertainment. And like enough, Sir Walter, by his indiscretion, will continue to assist us.
My lord?
He waves to our gunpowder conspirators. Did you not know?
My lord, I had no idea.
Oh, Sir William, you should be better informed.
The man's insolence is insupportable. Why, I should...
Calm yourself, Sir William. It does no harm. On the contrary, if it suggests a certain tying of loose ends...
Mean you, my lord, to include Raleigh in this latest treason?
No. Nothing so elaborate. We need no further proof against Sir Walter, who stands already in the shadow of the axe.
A long time has he stood there, my lord, begging your pardon.
It is not always necessary for the axe to fall. Old Raleigh is a greater prize alive than dead.
Ah, but not so Fawkes and Winter and the rest.
No, I'm afraid not. They have but one thing left to give us.
The trial, my lord. Will it be soon?
Early after Christmas. As soon as Cook has thoroughly prepared himself.
Oh, my lord, he will be looking forward to that.
No doubt. He has some lost ground to recover since Raleigh got the better of him. But I don't doubt that he will find this easier meat to chew.
I almost pity those poor devils when our Attorney General gets his teeth into them. He will tear them apart.
Indeed he will, Sir William. Indeed he will.
It appeareth to your lordships and the rest of this most honorable assembly that these are the greatest treasons that ever were plotted in England concerning the greatest king that ever was of England. Now, as this powder treason is in itself prodigious and unnatural, so it is in the conception and birth most monstrous. Arising as it does out of the dead ashes of former treasons. For it had three roots, all planted and watered by Jesuits and English Roman Catholics. The first root in England, the second in Flanders, the third in Spain. So that the principal offenders are the seducing Jesuits, men that use the reverence of religion, yea, even the most sacred and blessed name of Jesus, as a mantle to cover their impiety, blasphemy, and treason. Also to be considered is the means to compass and work these designs. These means were most cruel and damnable. By mining and by 36 barrels of powder, having crows of iron, stones, and wood laid upon the barrels to have made the breach the greater. Lord, what a wind, what a fire, what a motion and commotion of earth and air would there have been! Horret animus! I tremble even to think of it! Miserable desolation! No king! No queen, no prince, no issue male, no councillors of state, no nobility, no bishops, no judges. Oh, barbarous and despicable cruelty! Not the death of the king only, but of his whole kingdom. The destruction and dissolution of the frame and fabric of this ancient, famous, and ever-flourishing monarchy. Even the deletion of our whole name and nation.
Prisoners at the bar, do you have anything to say before I pass sentence on you? Guy Fawkes.
No. No, my lord. Only that I am truly sorry for my offence and I ask your forgiveness.
Forgiveness is not from the law, but from God. I advise you to pray for him. Next, Robert Winter.
My lord, I am truly sorry for my offense, and I beg you see my wife and children do not suffer for it. I will take my punishment as best I can, but Do not punish them also.
My lord.
Thomas Winter.
I would speak some words, my lord, on my brother's behalf.
Young man, you did well to wait your turn. However, you may continue.
Thank you, my lord. I wanted to say, my lords, that Robert Winter's offense is truly my own. He was not in this thing at all, except at my persuasion. God knows, if I could die two deaths and thereby save him...
Master Winter, you do neither your brother's nor your own cause any good at all by taking the name of the Lord thy God in vain. This may be apposite in Roman circles, but I assure you it is not the way we do things in the English Church. Next.
Therefore, from the admirable clemency and moderation of the king, the conclusion shall be, in that, howsoever these traitors have exceeded all others their predecessors in mischief, yet neither will the king exceed the usual punishment of law, nor invent any new torture or torment for them, but is graciously pleased to afford them as well an ordinary course of trial as an ordinary punishment, much inferior to the offense.
You shall be led from hence to the place whence you came, there to remain until the day of execution. And from thence you shall be drawn on a hurdle through the open streets to the place of execution, there to be hanged by the neck and cut down alive, and your body shall be opened, your heart and bowels plucked out, and your privy members cut off and thrown into the fire before your eyes. Then your head to be stricken off from your body, and your body shall be divided into four quarters to be disposed of at the king's pleasure. And may God have mercy on your souls.
My dear Sir Edward.
My lord.
Congratulations on an excellent performance.
Thank you, my lord.
Really quite mercurial. Indeed, I fancy you surpassed even yourself today. Well done, and thank you.
I am only glad, my lord, to have captured your approval.
Ah, not only mine, Sir Edward. The king himself.
His Majesty. He has already had reports.
He needed no report, Sir Edward, having seen and heard the whole thing for himself.
He was here.
Concealed behind a screen within a private gallery. He was most
impressed. My lord, why did you not tell me in advance? I would have...
What? Now, what more could any man have done? It's impossible, said Edward, to improve perfection.
My lord, you are too kind.
And now, if you will excuse me...
My lord.
Most pressing affairs of state, as always, but now especially...
Of course.
Including, I fancy, some future candidates for your most excellent attentions.
Oh, my lord, I am ever the state's devoted servant.
So are we all, Sir Edward. So are we all.
My lord!
Ah, Sir William, what news?
My lord... The Jesuit is taken.
What, Garnet?
The same.
Where?
At Hinlip, as you suspected.
Ah.
Hunger and other inconveniences forced them at last to quit their little priest hole. By the account, a device most cunningly contrived. 8 days our men were searching for
it. Who was it with him?
His man Oldcorn, alias Hall. Bromley has taken them to Worcester for the time being.
Then must we finish this day's business more swiftly than I had supposed.
My lord?
The executions must take place forthwith. What day is it today?
Monday, my lord, the 27th of January.
On Thursday, then, and Friday. Four on each day. See to it, will you?
My lord, it is not much time.
Then you'd better waste no more of it, Sir William, had you?
No, my lord. Right away, my lord. Thank you, my lord.
Thank me, Sir William. You will no doubt enjoy the coming business. I would that I could share your appetite.
Well, Guy, it's almost time.
Aye.
Tell me again.
Oh, Thomas, for God's sake!
Please.
We mount the scaffold. We make our prayers. And our last words of repentance. And farewell. We prepare ourselves to die. And then a messenger causes the sheriff to stay the executioner's hand. We're quietly told by him to withdraw indoors, where we receive due notice of the king's mercy and our reprieve.
Just as it was for Cobham, Gray, and Markham.
Yes.
Each man in his turn, one at a time.
Yes.
What if the messenger fails to reach the sheriff?
What?
What if he cannot penetrate the crowd? What if he is too late?
No.
No?
No.
He will be standing close to the sheriff from the start.
Yes. Yes. It'd look awkward for them else.
Have you ever seen an execution?
What?
Have you ever seen a man die upon the scaffold?
Some sheep thieves once in York.
No, no. I mean the full traitor's death.
No.
I saw the priests die.
When?
In the Cobham Rowley plot. Clark and Watson, their names were.
You saw it?
At Winchester Castle.
What were you doing in Winchester?
I went there specially. Out of curiosity.
Oh, I shouldn't like to see it.
No? You must have seen such things in Flanders.
That was different. It's surely worse in cold blood.
Aye.
What was it like?
Barbaric. God, I wish they would hurry up and come for us. This wait.
Hi.
What will you do when all this is over?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't really thought.
Have you not? Oh, I have.
Oh, what then?
The first woman that'll have me.
Ah.
Yes?
Aye. Or even one that won't, if she be sooner.
Aye.
Oh, God, yes.
Have you ever loved a woman, though, Guy? I mean, really loved.
Loved.
I don't think I have. Not really.
There was a girl once. When I was just a lad.
You are a fool.
Oh, she was a peach, though. A real peach. And she loved me, what's more. Said she'd wait for me when I went off to the war.
Did she?
I don't know. I never went back after. I haven't been home in over 10 years.
Maybe she's still waiting.
Aye. Maybe she is.
And you loved her. You really loved her.
I really did.
Now then, my masters, bestir yourselves. 'Tis time.
My brother.
Hold your tongue, traitor.
My brother Robert.
Go! Get down upon the hurdle!
Robert! Where is my brother Robert?
Your fine brother was dispatched to his eternal damnation this time yesterday morning.
Executed? Robert, no!
Silence, I say!
Do you hear that, Guy?
I hear it, Tom.
I've killed my brother.
Courage,
the
man.
The mark of Cain is upon me.
Hold your tongue,
or I will make
thee
hold it. Guy, they will kill me.
No, Tom, no.
They will kill me because I am a murderer.
Thomas Winter was first upon the scaffold. A slight and sickly-looking man, he seemed almost composed and quite ready for death.
Yes,
Stand bravely, Thomas. Show them you're not afraid.
Aye! Thomas Winter!
Aye, speak up.
I'm truly sorry for my offense.
Fear no man, for no man is present here today. None but a pack of dogs. Scavengers. Jealous nobodies. Taking some scrap of comfort from the misfortunes of others. Look at them. They make you sick, the common people, the herd, the mob. Aye, let them jeer and scream. Let them hate you, Tom. Who he shall have the last laugh here today?
Thomas Winter! Prepare to meet the traitor's death!
Oh, bravely, Thomas. Seem as though about to die with no regret, no shame. As you put your foot upon the ladder, then will the sheriff cry out. Now! He'll cry out. Now! But go slowly, Tom, for God's sake, give him time. Why does he not cry out? Why does he not cry out before it's too late? No. No. No, no.
Behold! The heart of a traitor!
Next, after Winter, came Ambrose Rookwood. And then Keyes, Lord Mordaunt's man. So eager was he to make a quick end that he fairly leapt from the ladder, breaking the rope, so that he was quite conscious when they brought him to the block.
Oh, please, please, no.
And his end was not as easy as it might have been. And last of all, the worst of all, the devil of the vault himself, Guy Fawkes. Evidently, he was still feeling the effects of his harsh imprisonment, for he was quite unable to mount the ladder without assistance.
Seeking to bring forth worthy.
No, please, no, it's not meant. It's not meant.
Go on, son, no use finding it.
Please.
I'll give you a moment longer before I cut you down. I can't do any more.
You don't understand.
For God's sake, chop down. Not out.
No.
Go on, I can't wait any longer.
They're going to do it.
No.
They really are going to do it.
No.
Michael Spice played Guy Fawkes in Gunpowder, Treason, and Plot by A.J. Walton. Thomas Winter was played by Christopher Scott and Robert Cecil by John Moffat. King James I, Fraser Carr, Sir William Wade, John Bott, Christopher Wright, Alexander John, and Francis Tresham, Hayden Wood. Walter Raleigh, Robert Lang, the Earl of Northumberland, Harvey Ashby, and Thomas Percy Gordon Reed, who also played the executioner. Robin Catesby, Anthony Hyde. Suffolk, Peter Robert Scott. Worcester, Graham Faulkner. And Sir Edward Cook, Leslie Glazer. The jailer, Sean Probert. Meg, Rowena Roberts. The Flemish landlord, Chris Jenkinson. And Popham, John Church. Gunpowder Treason and Plot was directed by Margaret Ettall.
John Moffat is appearing in Colette at the Comedy Theatre, London. And if you found that theory of the scheming behind the gunpowder plot intriguing, you might like to read Guy Fawkes' The True Story of the Gunpowder Plot by Francis Edwards.